Hello, everyone. Happy Tuesday, the last Tuesday of November, which means we are moving into December. And just FYI, it's not overly important, but today I, you know, just wrote some more gentle healing curriculum. In fact, I wrote the curriculum all the way through April. Actually, I did it yesterday. And what I discovered is that we're going to finish the workbook in our 54th week, which means even though we spent a couple days with some of the lessons, it's only taking us 2 weeks longer to finish the course workbook than it was originally designed. So in our 54th week, we will finish the workbook and then we'll go to something else. We'll begin our second year of gentle healing. And I'm not going to tell you yet what we're going to. I'm going to let you be in suspense for a little while. But we are in the 300s now, so we are wrapping up our first year of gentle healing, and there will be a second year of gentle healing as well. So to get us started tonight, why don't I just play a song? Let's see, the song that I've selected, it's one of my favorite songs. It's called Only Hope, and it's from the movie A Walk to Remember. Some of you will know this song. It is sung by Mandy Moore.
I'm giving you all of me.
Yeah, that song opens my heart every time I hear it. I love it. I saw Cheryl asked, how is Jamie? Jamie is doing great. In fact, she's better now than she's probably been in about 6 months. The last 3 days in a row, we've taken 3 mile walks, and she hasn't been able to take 3 mile walks, you know, since the spring. So she's really doing well. So yeah, thanks for asking. All right, everyone. So welcome to Gentle Healing. And this week, you looked at lessons 306 to 312, which was ending, what is the second coming, and beginning, what is the last judgment. And then you also read NTI 1 John. So I'm looking forward to finding out which of you want to share based on your experience in the last week. Some of the things that you could share about if you don't have ideas right now. On lesson 308, you were asked to do a contemplation. There were several lines that I highlighted. I listed the phrases, actually, from both the special theme and the lesson, and I asked you to contemplate those. So I don't know if you have something to share with me from your contemplation, but I would love to hear it if you do. Also, lesson 310, you were asked to ask the question about what is your nearest step to freedom, and to find out what inner wisdom wanted to share with you about your nearest step to freedom. So I'd love to hear what you got from that. Also, you know, I spent a lot of time in the last couple of weeks talking about the four principles of God. We're really looking at the fact now that there are two awakenings, one that is called the second coming of Christ, using the language of A Course in Miracles, the other one called the last judgment. And we also looked at the four phases of the spiritual path. So a lot of, I almost feel a little bit like Buddha. Because, you know, Buddha always made lists, right? And here I have the four principles of God, the two awakenings, and the four phases of the spiritual path. I have my lists. But I, you know, to see if you all have any realizations that came to you as you contemplated each of these, or if you have any questions. So, quite a bit going on. And so hopefully you all have something to share with me. So I'm waiting now to see who will take the mic first. Yeah, Kathy says it's been a lot to reflect on, and it has been. Oh, you say your hand is up. That's interesting, because my computer disagrees. But Stephen, I'm glad your hand is up. I'm turning the mic over to you. And Stephen, just to let you know, you do not have the mic yet. Maybe you're working with a phone today or something. Please try again.
Okay, am I on now? Oh, good. Thanks. Hi, Regina. Hi, everybody. I'm on. Hi, honey. I'm on my phone. I actually got a new computer for my birthday, and I realized earlier today that I hadn't downloaded PalTalk, and I get this big message that says it's not a safe site to download, and I have to go to settings and do some stuff, which I didn't do because I can't figure it out. But that's not why I raised my hand. So, anyway, Regina, I wanted to talk about the 1 John and a little experience I had with it. And so I'm specifically talking about 1 John chapter 2, verses 15 to 17. It's on page 445. and, you know, nothing I haven't seen before that aren't in the lessons, but just to read it real quick, it's a couple sentences for everybody else. It says, do not love the world or value anything of the world. Actually, just starting with that sentence. You know, honestly, how do you not do that? And I can get caught up in concepts and intellectual thinking, but when it comes right down to it, I was just looking around where I am, and, you know, I do. You know, I value financial security. I value relationships. I value Stuart Little, which is mine and Nancy's little dachshund. I value all sorts of things of the world. And I know our teachings has been, and exercises has been kind of training to value only the eternal. And I do the exercises and I get that that's what's important, but so my specific question is, when it comes right down to it, boy, I do value things of the world, and it's a little frustrating to me thinking, well, one, I should be farther along, and I noticed to a person that was over today, we were talking about the same thing. It's like talking about not only valuing that which is true, which wouldn't be, for example, financial security, but you still, it just seems like, hey, is this just all talk from me? I mean, because truly, how do you not value the things that seem so important? And now I'm just talking circularly because I just go right back to, I know we're being led to not do that, but it just, it can't like go right into my heart, which, so it's, I could say I don't value this. That doesn't mean I don't want it, but, or I don't have it, but to not, I'm sure not there yet. Anyway, I'll let go of the mic because that's what I want to talk about.
All right. Let's see. All right, good. I think I have the mic now. That was a little bit of a challenge. So I guess what I want to say to that, you know, when you say I'm just not there yet, first of all, I just want to say, you know, it's better to accept that than to judge that. You made an earlier comment when you were talking about, you know, something about thinking you should be further along than you are. And that, of course, is a judgment. And there's just, it's just not helpful at all to judge that. So it's much better to say, you know what, I'm not there yet, but then follow that up if you're willing, follow that up with, but I'm willing to be. I'm willing to be, you know, I'm willing to be at the point where I can let go of valuing the things of the world. Today I had an experience, and this is not the first time I've had this experience, but today I had an experience during meditation. Where I would say I was kind of presented with the thought of Jasmine. And also with the invitation to let go of her at the same time. You know, kind of a thought and an invitation at the same time. And again, I let go of her. I've let go of her many, many times. But I let go of her in meditation. The feeling was, you know, in Jasmine, we would have to say would be the one thing that, you know, that that I would value the most in this lifetime. In fact, I have told her and my mom and others that, you know, she's really been the joy of this lifetime. And that is true. You know, like if you take, as far as experiences go, if you take away all of the other experiences and just that one, yeah, that was the joy. But the interesting thing is, I'm also aware of how quickly it passed. I mean, Jasmine is an adult now. You know, she's in college. I see her. I was seeing her in the summer and at Christmas and spring break, but now she'll even be going to internships in the summer. So now it's just going to be Christmas and spring break. And, of course, a couple years down the road, she'll be working, most likely not here, since she's going to be an engineer and there's no engineering jobs here. And, you know, and you know, really, she's just, you know, finding her way right out of my life, just like I found my way right out of my parents' life. I talk to my parents about once every 3 months. You know, it's not a big focal point. So although Jasmine has been the joy of my life, I also see how temporary that being a parent was. It was a great joy raising that little girl, but it's over. And so there's something that shifts in the mind where you start noticing that all of these things that we, quote, value are temporary and we aren't temporary. You know, and when that really begins to sink in, then even though you still enjoy these things, the value of them actually begins to decrease. And then something seeks to know that which is eternal more. At least that's my experience of it. So if you're not there yet, I would just give your willingness, because it's in your nature. It's in your nature to be able to let go of the temporary and to want to know the eternal. So, oh my goodness, who else would like to share? Yeah, I noticed, Cheryl, when I was talking to Stephen, she quoted 1 John, trust yourself and trust the healing process which you have chosen. Thank you, Cheryl. Jay says, I just realized yes is the first three letters of Yeshua. That's great, Jay. All right, George, the mic is yours. Okay, George, please try again. And Stephen, I'm going to keep you on red dot, not because you're in trouble or anything, but somehow your phone keeps taking the mic every time we take you off red dot. So I'm going to keep you on red dot for now. And George, the mic is yours.
Okay. I think I've got it here. Stephen, that's a good question, you know, and it kind of prompted another question in my mind. And Regina, I don't know when you said it, but somewhere in the past, and it may be recently or not, you had a comment of releasing the expectation to awaken in this lifetime. And, now if I heard that wrong, please correct me, but you know, that's another thing that, you know, I'm sort of like Stephen in the sense that I don't feel like I'm making great progress, and even though I can see that I'm making more of an effort than I have in the past, I have no idea whether this lifetime will actually be that culmination or not. So if you could talk about that a little bit, I'd appreciate it. And I'll release the mic.
Yeah, sure, I'd love to. I don't think I said exactly to release the expectation, highlight on the word expectation, to release the expectation that you'll awaken in this lifetime. In fact, my personal opinion is it's best not to have any expectations at all about awakening. None at all. But I think it's a matter of being able to have a broader view about what you are. I think that's what I really wanted to encourage. A broader view about what you are. You are more than, you know, George in this lifetime or Stephen in this lifetime or anybody else. And sometimes when we think of ourselves as just this person in this lifetime, there's even a stress or a pressure or a sense of urgency that comes from the ego. like I have to wake up or fail, you know, I mean, like this is all I've got. And what's behind that is, again, this idea that I'm this limited person. So I think what I was really encouraging was a broader view, meaning realize that you are not just this person. And so you do have more than this lifetime, right? That broader view. But at the same time, what I didn't want to do is encourage anybody to rest on their laurels. Because at the same time, what I also said was, but now is the best time to work towards awakening. So it's kind of a balance of those two ideas. You know, now we really want to give it our best effort now, whatever that best effort is. We really want to give it our best effort now, you know, because now is the only time we have. We don't want to delay. But at the same time, realizing that if death should come to meet you, physical death should come to meet you, and awakening has not occurred, that's not a failure because the picture is broader than that. Right? The picture is broader than that. So, you know, sometimes we look at these people who are born and they almost seem like spiritual prodigies. And, you know, I have seen teachers like Ramana Maharshi asked, you know, how did this occur? And the answer that I always hear is from work in a previous lifetime. Now, I don't know that for a fact. I've never had that revealed to me personally, by Holy Spirit. But NTI does say that you can't go backwards on this path. Right. So just having that broader view, we want to do our best now, but if death should happen to meet us before awakening does, that's okay, you know, that's okay because, you know, we will just continue with the progress that we have made. But certainly we reduce our suffering in this and future lifetimes if we make as much progress as possible. Because suffering comes from believing you're the affected self. I'll say that again. Suffering comes from believing that you are the affected self. And to be honest, none of us know what's going to come next in this lifetime or what's going to come next in another lifetime. We don't know what challenges may be ahead of us. And to the degree that we still believe we're the affected self, that's to the degree which we can suffer. So if we really use now as much as possible to release this belief that we're the affected self and to embrace the unaffected self, then even if it does still take, you know, two or three more lifetimes, you know, and there'll certainly be challenges in those lifetimes, just like there's going to be challenges in this lifetime, because we are advancing as quickly as we can, because we are releasing that belief that I am the false self and embracing that realization that I am the true self, that is going to reduce any suffering that may come about through the challenges in this lifetime or a further lifetime. So again, it's both realizing there's a broader perspective and still using this moment to the best of your ability. So hopefully that answers the question. And Kathy, the mic is yours.
I can see now, a year or two down the road, however long it's been, I don't really know, the importance of that intensity, the desire for liberation, and how some teachers, you know, we've talked about it here in the room, for instance, Elie Ruzdar and Michael Langford, and this weekend when I was reading from Experience Your Perfect Soul, Eva Bell Werber spoke to the idea that very few are dedicated enough to have this so-called awakening, and that used to make me, I used to get pissed off when somebody would say that to some degree. I mean, it wasn't like, you know, insane or anything, but it felt discouraging. And now I can see how true that is, that, you know, if I'm really paying attention to my own diligence, my own consistency, my own application, my own refusal to participate, my own placing busyness before stillness, all of those things, all of those distractions, it feels now to me like those teachers that I was just sharing, those, you know, those few, and I think there's probably others, are really in a passionate way saying to me, look, don't make yourself suffer any longer than you have to. Don't treat yourself this way. And, you know, one of the ways that's done is through that sense of a strict, honest sharing from the position that, you know, it takes great willingness. It does take some effort. And like you said earlier, Regina, you know, where we are in our practice, I mean, it is where we are, and it's not about judging that, but it's almost like that autocorrect where it is important to pay attention to what I'm doing. It is important. And Moses is paying attention to what I'm doing also. He's, when I get, like, quote, on the phone, he's like a 2-year-old. You know how when we're like, your kids were like little, maybe your kids were little, when they know you're occupied with something, they want your attention. So he starts to beg. But I say hello to Stuart Little. Yeah, mommy, 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 I need something. Only he doesn't. So, yeah, pay attention to me. Okay, I'm going to give up the mic. Oh, one more thing. I really enjoyed today's tip from the lesson, not only the lesson, but also the theme, which right now is escaping me. I'm a little bit distracted, so I'm just going to give up the mic. Thanks.
Yeah, thank you very much. And again, you know, give Moses our love. And yeah, it's the last judgment. What is the last judgment? And today, I think, if I remember what you guys are on, because again, I'm several days ahead of you, I think today was when I went through some definitions. I went through a definition of ego, Christ consciousness, and then the last judgment, which could be called Nirvana or Manonasa as two possible names. And then for some reason, as I go forward writing the tips, I've stuck with the name Nirvana. So that seems to be the one I picked. Don't know why, because usually I say Manonasa, but I picked Nirvana. But yeah, one thing that's interesting about the ego, again, most people think of the ego and as you know, as the wrong mind, right? That's the ego. But I've noticed that's not true in every quote that I've contemplated. I also looked it up in the dictionary, and I noticed that that's not necessarily, it's, you know, one possibility, but that's not necessarily true, that there is a broader definition of ego, and that broader definition is just a sense of self. It doesn't have to be the negative, wrong-minded sense of self, just a sense of self. And under that more broad definition even consciousness, even the I am presence would still fit the word ego, although that is not what most people mean when they say the word ego by any stretch of the imagination. You know, you transcend the ego and you awaken to consciousness is what most people speak of. But, you know, if you really contemplate the masters, especially if you really contemplate Nisargadatta Maharaj, Nisargadatta is very clear that we awaken to the I am presence, the I am sense of self, consciousness as a sense of self. And then we awaken beyond that. And so what I don't know is when people talk, you know, Michael Langford, for example, talks about the final death of the ego as Manonasa or Nirvana, and that would be the equivalent of the last judgment. So when he uses the word ego, is he talking about total sense of self, no more sense of self at all? You know, I don't know. I haven't asked him that question. But I've also been contemplating lately the movie we saw, Little Buddha. Little Buddha, you may remember when he was sitting underneath the Bodhi tree. First there are all these temptations and then, you know, all of this fear stuff. And then it got silent. And I think that silence probably represented the first awakening, the awakening to consciousness. And then after the awakening to consciousness, he peered into the water and he saw himself, which I think represented still a sense of self, not a personal, but still a sense of self. And he reaches down into the water and he pulls that up and he says something to that. I wish I could remember the exact line. I'll have to watch the movie again. But he says something to that about how he's happy to meet the architect. Right, the architect. And I always thought that was a funny line. What does he mean by the architect? And I think lately in my contemplation, yeah, you will not build this house again. Yeah. And he calls him the architect. Well, you know, based on what we're learning, everything comes out of consciousness. Right? Everything comes out of consciousness. So what if consciousness is the architect? I mean, I would say consciousness is the architect. And so that's when he said no to the architect, you will not build this house again, that's when he awakened into nirvana. He transcended the second sense of self, right? So these are just, I'm going to call these possibilities now that I'm really looking at, but I'm really contemplating very, very, very deeply. And like I said, In the Bible, it even refers to the second death in Revelation. There's the first death of Satan, and then there's the second death, right? The first death lasts 1,000 years, and then he's allowed to come back, and then there is the second death. So, it's just stuff I'm looking at. I don't have any conclusive things to say about it at this point. Except that I am, you know, I'm really noticing, I've noticed for a few years that Nisargadatta has said that there's the I am presence and then there's beyond the I am presence. And now I just seem to be really there looking at the difference between these two awakenings. And of course, I'm pulling you guys along with me because you're reading my contemplations, right? And then the other definitions were about the Christ consciousness as the first awakening and, again, Nirvana or Manonasa as the second awakening. The first awakening, of course, is what results in true perception, the real world. And the second awakening is beyond the world entirely. Yeah. Who else would like to share? I noticed Lynn says, interesting, since I didn't realize there are two. I think a lot of people don't realize there are two awakenings, but there are people who do realize it. In fact, when was it, September of this year, I interviewed Bentinho Massaro. And Bentinho Massaro is also very much contemplating the second awakening right now. That's where he is too. Yeah, he has realized the first awakening to consciousness. And now he's really deeply contemplating and looking towards that second awakening. He's in the exact same contemplation that I'm in. And so we talked about that in that interview. Yeah. All right, Tony, the mic is yours.
Hi, everyone. I wanted to comment on a couple of the lessons. The first one I wanted to comment was on some 311. I judge all things as I would have them be. And I wrote down in my journal the four steps that you had instructed to look at the judgment. Right now, I am actually, there's a lot of judgment, self-judgment going on with me, and there is a judgment of another particular person in my life. So I'm noticing, number two, noticing the perception of separation of me and not me, that is caused by the judgment. And I definitely see sides, who's more right or who's right. Number three, remember your desire to see without separation. And that one's, I'm finding when I'm in the middle of anger and judgment, it's harder to recognize my desire to see without separation. But I do go back to my my true heart's desire to try to reinforce that. And it, depending on how stuck I am in this particular judgment right now, it seems to be a little difficult. And number four is let go of your judgment simply because it conflicts with what I truly want. And that's where I think that I'm really struggling right now to let go of the judgment. It's been about maybe 3 days now, and it seems like this is taking forever for it to pass. I do sense that there is more lightness now than there was 3 days ago. But I'm not ready to actually, I feel like I need to actually verbalize or talk to this person about it. And I don't know if that's necessarily, you know, what is really what I should be doing. So I'm still just, you know, doing my best at surrendering this. And then the second thing I wanted to mention is the workbook lesson in 308. This instant is the only time there is. And you had mentioned in your tip to contemplate what the special theme was that you had pointed out. And I wrote a little blurb about it, so I just wanted to read that. I wrote, all minds recognize the one mind and recognizes one consciousness that is the one true creation and the extension of God. And for the lesson itself, the lines that you had pointed out, I wrote a little contemplation about that as well, and I will share that also. The personal will has perceived time to serve itself and to maintain itself. If the personal will is to be let go of, the perception of the use of time must be let go of as well. The ideas of past and future that are used to define the personal self must be seen as a mechanism to remain identified as the personal self. The past and future are not here right now, but right now is present now. Right now is the only time that a decision can be made to know the capital self. Right now is the only time that a decision can be made to know consciousness. Coming into awareness of truth is happening in the now moment. This is the present now blessing, where love is always present without end. Thank you, God, for this instant to know truth. Thank you for letting me share.
Yeah, thank you very much for sharing. And just kind of a good rule of thumb is to the best of your ability, to avoid talking to anyone, about something that may be going on while you're in your wrong mind. Avoid talking from the wrong mind probably is the rule of thumb. Avoid talking from the wrong mind. So always, you know, work on letting go of that wrong mind and then see if there's still something that is to be said. Yeah. All right. We still have about 4 minutes left if there's anyone else who wants to share. Oh, you know what? I want to say something else, actually, to what Tony said. There's a, even though I was, this week, the four steps I've been sharing, is about looking at your desire to see oneness, to see without separation and letting go of judgment because of the separation that's inherent in judgment. There is also another process that is helpful to letting go of judgment. The other process is noticing your own pain when you're judging. You know, when you're judging someone, look and notice the pain it's causing you. Realize you don't want to suffer. And let go of the judgment simply because it's causing your own suffering. And I've used both of those in my process. Basically, I use whatever was helpful in the moment to help me let go of the judgment. Right? That's what's nice about a toolbox, is sometimes in one moment, you can't use one tool, but you can use another. So it's nice to have a toolbox. So yeah, that other process that I have used is, whenever I judge, notice the pain the judgment is causing me. Notice, you know, basically you could say notice that you're not light and joyful, right? To some degree, there's something other than light and joy, which we'll call suffering. So notice the pain that the judgment is causing me. Then realize that I don't want to be in pain, right? And then let go of the judgment because it's what's causing the pain and I want to be free of the pain. So yeah, another process. All right, is there anyone else who wants to share? All right then, what I am going to do is go to 1 John. Isn't 1 John lovely? Did you guys like it as much as I did? It's been a while since I've read it, so I really enjoyed it. I think it's been a couple years since I've read it, so it was fun reading it again. So starting on 1 John chapter 1, down at verses 5 to 7. I noticed Cheryl said she read it three times. That's great, Cheryl. Yeah, it's short enough that you can do that. it says, God is light. In him there is no darkness at all. And that's a quote from the Bible, actually. What then is God? God is an awareness that is pure because it looks on only that which is wholly true. Right? God is an awareness that is pure because it looks on only that which is wholly true. That's the definition that NTI is giving us of God. God is that which sees only God, we could say. And it says, this is God, but then it points out, and God, as an awareness, exists within you. And one thing that's really interesting about that sentence is it doesn't say, if you work really, really hard, you will have that awareness. It says that awareness exists within you now. Right now. I mean, that's a pretty cool thought, right? It's right there, right now. And so all we need to do is realize it. But it's already present. And in fact, the top of page 444 says, to know thyself, return the mind to God. This is done in a moment of peace, when God is your only desire. So that takes us back to the conversation that Stephen brought up about valuing things of the world. You know, we can't value things of the world and have God as our only desire too, right? Because God and something else, whether it's Jasmine or whether it's financial security or whatever, God and something else is not only God. So even if we're not there yet, having the realization that in order to awaken to our truth, we really have to want only our truth, just having that realization and then being willing for that is really helpful. And, you know, it makes perfect sense. It's like, to me, this is even logical. Because if we are what A Course in Miracles calls the powerful Son of God, and if we have the power of being the Son of God, how in the world could we awaken to an awareness that is pure and looks only on that which is true if we still want something else? If we still want something else, and if we are the powerful Son of God, then we are still going to have something else, still going to get something else, right? Because that's just what our power naturally does. The only way that we could awaken into that pure awareness is to want nothing but it, to be pure in that way. Pure meaning not mixed. I don't mean pure as the opposite of sin. I mean pure as the opposite of mixed. You know, like if you have a glass of water and then you pour a quarter cup of Coke in it, the water is no longer pure, right? Yeah. So pure means not mixed. It's not mixed with valuing other things, right? We can only have pure awareness if our desire is pure, not mixed. Chapter 2 says, "My dear child, look within and see that you have not sinned." Look within and see that you have taken the sins of the world upon your breast and held them there. I don't know if you guys remember, but earlier in the year, we watched a video clip of a man. I don't even remember his name now. I'd have to go back and look. But he was describing his awakening process. And as he was describing his awakening process, he actually described where first there was like a first level awakening, a higher level awakening. But then after the higher level awakening, he dropped into what he called the heart. And in the heart, what happened at this next level of awakening, the first level awakening was like a personal awakening. But when he dropped into the heart, it became more universal. And he felt the burden of all of the suffering in the world. Do you remember that? And that was the next level of forgiveness that he needed to move through or allow. He was really just allowing this to happen. He said it happened to him. But he had to allow that second level, which was forgiving the pain and suffering of the world as if it was all his. So when this says, look within and see that you have taken the sins of the world upon your breast and held them there. This is probably literal. It's speaking about our unconscious or subconscious level, but it is literal. Have you ever felt really, really, really guilty for something that was kind of tiny? Like the guilt was over-exaggerated considering how tiny the infraction was. You know, this would kind of explain that unconscious guilt, right, that comes from taking the sins of the world on. And, of course, what's done this isn't, again, the individual. It's the universal self, right, the universal mind, which is within you. So look within and see that you have taken the sins of the world upon your breast and held them there. And then realize what Jesus did. He released the sins of the world as illusion. And the words "as illusion" are italics. He released the sins of the world as illusion. accepted the face of Christ and returned himself to the awareness of God. And again, depending on how we read this, we might see those two awakenings there. You know, like first he accepted the face of Christ, and then after awakening to the level of consciousness, he returned himself to the awareness of God beyond perception entirely. Down at the bottom of the page, it says, how shall you know if you stand within the light or stumble within the dark? I love that little test because we all know that our ego loves to lie to us. The ego loves to lie, likes to fool us. And so one of the things it likes to fool us into is thinking we're further along than we were, than we are. Thinking we're further along than we are. And it's really helpful to have a very healthy idea about where you are. You know, there's really two mistakes we can make. One is the one that Stephen mentioned earlier, thinking I should be further ahead than I am. That's a mistake. The other mistake is thinking we're further ahead than we are. Right? We really want to just have a healthy, even-minded idea of where we are and what our next step is. That's, you know, that's the healthy way to do this. And so because the ego likes to lie to us and make us think that we're further along than we are, 1 John gives us a simple test. A simple test. How shall you know if you stand within the light or stumble within the dark? There is one simple test, and this simple test shall never fail. Ask yourself honestly how you feel about your brother. If there is one brother whom you do not love truly, you are lost within darkness. Only takes one, right? That's a pretty easy test. And again, we don't want to judge ourselves for this. We're just being honest. You know, I still have work to do. I'm not this enlightened being. I still have work to do. And get back to doing the work instead of pretending that we're the enlightened being. So it also says, rest yourself and let this darkness pass. In fact, I love this next part, which is italicized and centered. Do not reach for the darkness and it will pass. When the light streams through and reaches for you, embrace it. That's two really simple tips. Do not reach for the darkness. So no matter what the darkness is, whether it's the feeling of guilt, the feeling of fear, whether it's judgment thoughts in my mind against another person, judgment thoughts in my mind against me, no matter what form the darkness is, if I just follow this simple rule, do not reach for it. Do not reach for it really means, you know, don't get all involved with it in a believing way. Right? Do not reach for it. Do not get all involved with it in a believing way. Just because you feel guilty doesn't mean you are guilty. Right? Just means that that feeling is present. Do not reach for the darkness and it will pass. It's always going to be temporary. But when the light streams through and reaches for you, embrace it. Embrace the light whenever it comes, whether it's during contemplation, meditation, while taking a walk, while listening to music, whenever it comes, just really embrace and love it. That's a pretty good tip. It also says, do not be fooled by the illusion of pain. In resting yourself, you are healing yourself, and a great dawning is about to occur. One of the things that is challenging about the purification process is that, again, this deeper level of pain that's in our subconscious, it arises to be healed, which means that the fear that we feel is stronger than the fear that we felt in everyday life. And the guilt and unworthiness that we feel is stronger than the guilt and the unworthiness that we felt in everyday life. Because in everyday life, we allowed ourselves to feel the tip of the iceberg, but we repressed and stored through repression everything else. And so now all of that is going to rise to the surface if we're genuinely willing. All of that is going to rise to the surface, which means it gets darker first. The feelings get more intense. And what we don't want to do is make the mistake of running back to our ego defense mechanisms, like blaming somebody else for how I feel, trying to control things in order to not feel this way anymore, you know, whatever defense mechanisms we've used. We don't want to do any of that. I mean, that's just the opposite of healing. We don't want to do any of that. When these feelings arise, we want to rest. Let them be. Let them heal. Let them rise. I used to imagine them rising and evaporating. But in order to evaporate, I had to let them rise. They have to rise up to the air. You know, if they're hidden down in me, they can't evaporate. It requires air to evaporate, right? So they have to rise up to the air, and then they can evaporate. So I would imagine that. Kathy says she's remembering that she's not her feelings. I am not my feelings. And again, you may come up with your own way. And the funny thing is, it really doesn't matter what tool or what piece of imagination you use in order to allow yourself to do this, as long as you allow yourself to do this. Stay out of the way, let the feelings rise, and heal. And then it says, trust yourself, with a capital S, which is that which is healing. That which is healing what's in you is what I mean. It's the healer. Trust yourself and trust the healing process which you have chosen. You have decided you wanted to heal. So allow it to happen. It also says, when you are distracted by the world, you forget to focus on your healing. This is why you don't want to value anything of the world. You know, and let's use that example of financial security, because of course a lot of people want financial security. I don't have any, so I can't want it. I used to, and now I don't, so I can't want it. But, in a way I do. I mean, in a way I have financial security, but it's just that my financial security is in the moment. It's not padded into the future. And, you know, the imagination says in order to be financially secure, it has to be padded into the future, right? And that's not there. So let's use that example. If we get really, really concerned about financial security, you know, here we are, most of us are aging, getting closer and closer to that retirement age. You know, you need money in retirement. Social security is not really enough in today's world. And you start thinking about that. When you're thinking about that, you're not thinking about healing the fear that you're feeling in that moment. By being distracted about your thoughts regarding financial security, you're not even noticing that you're feeling fear. I mean, you are, but you're not noticing it with awareness. You're not noticing that this is an opportunity to heal. You literally miss the opportunity to heal when you get caught up in the world. So the world is a distraction from healing. And this is one reason why you need to value healing more than the world. If you can't let go of valuing the world now, at least value healing more. If you value healing more, then when you notice you're starting to panic about your financial security, you'll see it as, oh, here's an opportunity to rest, accept, and trust, and heal some fear. Not here's an opportunity to figure out, you know, how I can pad my future with financial security. So your intention and your focus is going to be in a different place if you value healing more. But you're going to be distracted from that if you value the world more. And you'll miss the opportunity to heal as a result. It says, illusion can be recognized in your heart by the priorities you place on all that you see. And then listen to this sentence. It's a great sentence. If anything in the world has more priority than another thing, you are desiring within the world and you have asked to experience illusion. If anything in the world has more priority than another thing, that means that everything in the world should be equal. Right? Everything in the world is equal. And when everything in the world is equal, You know, there's just this sense of this is what's happening and this is where my attention is right now. But, you know, there's just not varying priorities. You deal with what's in front of you now, but then you deal with what's in front of you now, and then you deal with what's in front of you now, and it's all the same. But if one thing is more important than another thing, then you're still focused outward on the world. So the only exception to this, right, is your relationship with me, your inner teacher, your desire to heal. That can stand above everything else. That's the exception to the rule. Your desire for healing, your desire for awakening can, and in fact should, if you want to heal, should have a higher priority than everything else. But everything in the world is going to be the same if you really have put healing as your top priority. And so again, this is another test where you can look and you can see. And if you notice, oh boy, I can tell that my health is a whole lot more important than something else. And I'm really concerned about my health. Well, then that does mean that the desire is still with the world. But don't beat yourself up for it. Just notice it. Remember we talked about the power of noticing a few weeks ago. Just notice it. Notice, I see. I'm still focused in the world because I'm really concerned about my health. I think about my health all the time. I do things all the time to try and change my health, right? Notice it. Realize that means you still want in the world. And then give your willingness for that to change. See, it says you are led astray by your own false desires so that you always follow yourself. Yeah, you always follow yourself. So if your interest is in the world, you know, it's your interest that's in the world. You're always following yourself. And the good news in that is you can shift your interest. You really can. If you really start looking honestly at the effects of having your interest in the world. For example, if you're worried about your financial situation or you're worried about your health, how do you feel when you're worried about your financial situation? How do you feel when you're worried about your health? Is that joy and love, or is that suffering? And what do you want? Do you want joy and love? Or do you want suffering? You know, just looking with an honest eye. And it can be over time. You know, you might look at something for 2 or 3 years before you notice the shift. And you go, wow. You know, I remember I used to always be worried about my health. And not much has changed with my health, but somehow I'm okay with it now. You know, I notice I'm happy and I'm not worried about my health. You know, that it can take time for that to happen. You know, so a part of the problem also, I think, is that we live in this microwave society where I want to focus on noticing my pain and letting go of my pain for one day and then tomorrow be over this. You know, it doesn't always happen that way. It can, but it doesn't always happen that way. So just keep noticing, right? Just keep noticing that you have different priorities in the world. Just keep noticing that and give your willingness for something different. And then, you know, allow the miracle to occur so that that shifts. So it says, when you have gone into the darkness and seem to be away from love, and that could be because you're worried about your health, you're worried about your financial security, you're worried about your children, it could be anything. When you've gone into the darkness and seem to be away from love, remember that love is always there. And then listen to this next sentence. Stand quietly, desiring only love. And let love become in you. That, to me, that's just gorgeous. So if I notice I'm worried about my health, I just pause, take a deep breath, stand quietly, rest in faith and trust. Let that worry about my health pass. Desire only love. Just wait. But again, what most people do if they're worried about their health is nowadays they run frantically to the internet or frantically to the doctor, you know, trying to resolve the issue. And I'm not saying don't ever go to the doctor, you know, because there are certainly times that we have to go to the doctor. I'm talking about obsessive worrying about health. You know, like some people have that. Just like some people have obsessive worrying about money and some people have obsessive worrying about their kids. You know, we all have our thing, right? And we want to learn to let go of these obsessions because really all they're doing is just the ego being like a hamster in a wheel in our mind, just running and running and running. And there's never an end to whatever our obsession is unless we get out of the hamster wheel. You know, we have to get out, right? Just stop. Bob Newhart says, just stop, because if we don't stop, it keeps going. And so this is really saying just stop, but it's saying it in a very beautiful way. Stand quietly, desiring only love, and let love become in you. But that is saying just stop. It's not saying run to the internet. Right? Stand quietly, desiring only love, and let love become in you. Stand quietly and rest in faith and trust that darkness may pass and light may become in you. Have faith in the light and hold only unto the light. It is by holding only to light that light is all you shall see. Our problem is that we hold to darkness. We hold to whatever our worries are, whatever our obsessions are. We need to do the opposite. We need to stop holding on to the obsessions and hold on to the light, or at least the desire for the light. Chapter 3 says, you are not aware of your God awareness because you have allowed that which is false to be held in your mind as true. Held. See, we hold to our obsessions. We play with them all day long like they're our favorite toy. And that's why we're not aware of our God awareness. This is what is meant by purify yourself. You must make the decision to release all that is not true from the mind. All right, so we have to learn to let go of these obsessions. He goes on to talk about separation and how separation is not true. And it's lovely, but I just feel like skipping over that for now. So I'm going to trust my intuition and I'm going to move on. At least move on to some degree. I'm moving on to page 447. Right about the middle of the page, it says, all that is true is oneness and the activity of oneness, which is love. All that is true is oneness and the activity of oneness, which is love. That reminds me of a personal message that I received that defined love. Some of you might remember this. I don't know how many of you have been around that long. This was many years ago. Some of you are really new, basically new to me. In the last couple of years, you've shown up. But the definition of love is giving to spirit, through spirit, that which spirit requests. Do any of y'all remember that? I'll write it in the room. Yeah, Dove remembers it for sure. Yeah, love is giving to Spirit through Spirit that which Spirit requests. Now, again, we have to look at how we request things. We request things by thinking about them. We may think we're requesting the opposite. For example, if I'm always thinking about how I don't have enough money, you know, I think what I'm requesting is money. But actually, since I'm spending all of my time thinking about lack, what the universe hears is a request for lack. If I spend all of my time thinking about how people treat me unfairly, what the universe hears is a request to be treated unfairly. If all I think about is how I'm not as good as everyone else, what the universe hears is a request to feel less than others. And the universe gives us what we ask for. It doesn't judge it. It doesn't say, oh, she didn't really mean that. It just gives us. I remember Neil Donald Walsh in his book, Conversations with God. I think God said something to him like, the universe is like a Xerox machine, right? It just Xeroxes whatever you want and gives it right back to you. And that is love. Love is giving to Spirit, through Spirit, that which Spirit requests. So if we realize that that's all that's going on here, no matter what you see, no matter how bad it looks, that's what's going on here, then you realize that the only thing that is happening is oneness being itself. Oneness giving to oneness what oneness is focused on. There is no such thing as separation. But then again, we can also begin to ask, you know, what do I want? I mean, that's such an important question. What do I want? Do I want to worry about lack all day? Do I want to worry about poor health all day? Do I want to worry that my children can't take care of themselves all day? And then receive that? At least in my perception? Is that what I want? Because if we understand how oneness works, then we can, you know, be different within oneness and get different results, right? No longer create a future like the past. Does that sound familiar? So all that is true is oneness and the activity oneness, which is love. And then it's an interesting little thing, because before we had that test that said, how do we know if we walk in the light? Well, if there's even one brother that I don't love wholeheartedly, well, then that means I'm in the darkness, right? And now it says, you need not worry that you do not love your brother in truth, because love is all that you are capable of. You only need ask, am I aware of my love? If you are not, you are still believing that which is false. Love is all you're capable of, which means even when you are being angry and mean, right? Which is totally wrong-minded. Don't get me wrong. That's totally wrong-minded. But where is the wrong mind coming from? Where are those thoughts that are in your mind, the wrong-minded thoughts coming from? They're coming from our oneness. And again, the activity of oneness is love. It doesn't mean you can't transcend it, because certainly we all want to transcend it, because at that vibrational level, love causes suffering, because we're asking for suffering, right? We want to raise to a higher vibrational level, because our true will is happiness, not suffering. And we want to, you know, be different with our minds, so that what we receive is different. But when you're in your wrong mind, the wrong mind came, those thoughts came into you from the oneness. You're only capable of love. You cannot be separate from the oneness. Not even in your, quote, worst moment. You can't step outside of it. Every thought that comes into your mind comes from the oneness. in NTI John, 1 John chapter 4, it says, everything that you experience within the dream of the world comes from one of two sources. The thinking mind, which is the mask of separation, or the Holy Spirit, which is the true desire of the heart. Every thought, every feeling, every belief that you seem to live by, and every image that you seem to see or hear speaks the thoughts of one source or the other. Your role is to discern the source of the thought, feeling, belief, or image, and then decide if you will accept it, and by accept it here it means believe it, accept it as true, and then decide if you will accept what it teaches based upon the source. My God, this is one of the best practices in the world. I practice this, and it works. You guys got your book open to page 448? You should circle this paragraph. This is one of the best practices in the world. All you do is discern all day long. Is that the wrong mind or the right mind? If it's the wrong mind, you let it go. If it's the right mind, you follow it. Nothing else matters. It doesn't matter what he did, what she did, what the financial situation is, what the health is, what the kids are doing. The only thing that matters is this ego or spirit? That makes everything so simple. If it's ego, let it go. If it's spirit, follow it. Piece of cake. You really don't have to know much. You can be pretty much be a dummy and do this. You don't have to analyze anything. You don't have to figure anything out. It's the best practice in the world. And then it helps you, you know, how do you know whether it's ego or how do you know whether it's spirit? You know, lots of people get all confused about that. You can really tell by how you feel. Right? You can tell by how you feel. You know, if you feel peace, acceptance, trust, joy, if you feel gratitude, these are the feelings of spirit. So, for example, if there doesn't appear to be enough money, you have no idea how things are going to unfold, but you feel okay about that, you're looking at that with the right mind. That's the bottom line. If there doesn't seem to be enough money, you have no idea what's going to happen, but you're all worried about that and stressed about that, you're looking at it with the wrong mind. Same situation, but two points of view. When you find that you're looking at it with the wrong mind, let go of your thinking, let go of whatever it is you're thinking about doing, let go, let go, let go. And when you're looking at it with the wrong mind, when you can feel that you're looking at it with the right mind, trust yourself and do whatever is in your mind to do. You can trust that right mind. You can tell by how you feel what you are listening to in your mind right now. Always. It never fails. If it's ego, let it go. If it's spirit, follow it. Here are some of the ideas that come from the wrong mind, some of the feelings that come from the wrong mind. Lack, limits, competition, victimhood, personhood, strife, fighting, sickness, death, rage, sorrow, helplessness, hopelessness, control, and loss. And, you know, it's teaching us discernment. It's saying that whenever we feel these feelings, whatever we're thinking in the mind at the moment is ego, and we can just let it go, right? But it also says, the awareness of God looks on nothing that is false, so all that is false need not be looked on by you. Right? You really can just let it go. I mean, there is a thought that shows up in the mind that says, I can't just let this go. Yeah, you can. Yeah, you can. The awareness of God isn't looking on it. You don't need to look on it. Right? You don't need to look anywhere where God isn't looking. You can let it go. And then the rest of John is talking about, you know, the fact that you may doubt that you're one with God. But it points out that God is existence or life. And if you really think of God as existence or life, you'll notice that in any present moment, you are one with God. Because in any present moment, if you look, you notice that you exist, right? It's the most basic, knowing in the world. And I'm going to close 1 John with that. And I'm going to take like a 30-second break. Just 30 seconds here. We'll just have silence for a moment. Just because it feels good to me when I close one book before going and picking up the other book to kind of just rest, you know, kind of like cleanse my palate. So I'm just going to sit here for 30 seconds, drink some water, and then we'll open up Gina Lake. All right, I think I'm being invited to take care of Shiloh tomorrow, which is probably something I can do. Well, I haven't read, I peeked at a text. I couldn't read the whole text. I didn't open it. But it looks like I'm being invited to take care of Shiloh and eat chocolate. Somebody else is trying to call me, too. So we'll look at all that later. Now we're ready for Gina Lake. So with Gina Lake, I am on page 118. Following your heart. And it's just really interesting because following your heart, the heart here is what NTI calls the Holy Spirit or what the Course calls the right mind. So it's really just continuing the same conversation that we just had about, you know, you want to discern the source. Is it ego or Holy Spirit? If it's ego, let it go. If it's Holy Spirit, follow it. I mean, that, like I said, that's just one of the best practices in the world. I just can't tell you guys how different your life would be, how different the world would be if everybody just followed that one simple practice, even if we didn't do anything else. Really, nothing else, just that. Discern, ego, Holy Spirit, ego, let it go, Spirit, follow it. Oh, my God, that would change everything. That would change everything. We don't need anything else, because Spirit would teach us everything else we needed to know. It's just the best practice in the world. I hope you're listening. I hope you're writing it down. Just discern the source of the current thought. If it's ego, let it go, no matter what it is. If it's Spirit, follow it. Gosh. So she's on one side of that coin now, Gina Lake. She's talking about following your heart, following Spirit. And she's going to give us some gentle ideas. Oh, Whale is asking, would you say that ego impersonates Spirit to confuse us? Yeah, definitely. That's why you want to look at your feeling. Right, because the feelings never lie. Ego can't fake the feeling. So it may be sounding like Spirit, but judging you and you feel guilty, or judging someone else, you know, and using some spiritual language and you feel angry. You know, the feeling is what's honest. It can fake the words in the head, but it can't fake the feeling. So that's why you want to look at how you feel. You know, if you're feeling fear, guilt, anger, what was that list? Victimhood, all that stuff. You know, you're listening to ego, no matter how spiritual it sounds. Right? Personhood, yeah. Exactly. So yeah, pay attention to how you feel. If it's ego, let it go. So again, she's talking about following your heart, following the right mind. So she'll share a little more on this, so I'll go ahead and just share what she shares. She says, everyone knows what follow your heart means. It's a common expression and an everyday experience. Many times a day, even in ego-driven lives, people follow their heart. It moves you, pulls you, drives you, encourages you, and inspires you wordlessly. The heart I am referring to is the spiritual heart. And again, that's what A Course in Miracles calls the Holy Spirit, right? She's calling it the spiritual heart, but she's talking about the exact same thing. The heart I am referring to is the spiritual heart. She says it's not the human heart. I'm going, Clay, you were confused. she says, whenever the divine self is operating through you, you feel, listen, this sounds just like what I just read out of NTI. It's like she's copying me, you know, or I'm copying her. Something's going on. Whenever the divine self is operating through you, you feel love, joy, gratitude, and peace. Oh my God, what did 1 John say? Wasn't it the exact same list? Right? Love, joy, gratitude, and peace. Now she says it could be subtle. You know, sometimes it can just feel like a general contentment, right? But really, if you look at it, it's love, joy, gratitude, and peace. So when you're following your heart, when you're listening to the right mind, you have these feelings. Another description that I've heard, which I agree with, is a feeling that all is well. Just this feeling that all is well. I think another word that NTI used that she doesn't have in her list is acceptance, being accepting, just naturally accepting of whatever is, or welcoming, it also said, right? But you can tell she's talking about the exact same thing here. We haven't really changed lessons, we've just changed books. Whenever the divine self is operating through you, you feel love, joy, gratitude, and peace, although often only very subtly. Oh, then she does go on and list accepting and compassionate and open. So again, accepting, compassionate, and open. So, you know, we're still getting that same theme of feelings, right, when you're listening to the right mind. It's that same feeling, that same set of feelings. She says, whenever you follow the heart, whenever you follow the ideas that come into your mind with these feelings, something positive always results. And that, of course, is because you're listening to the right mind. She says, following the heart can be challenging because the heart doesn't communicate in words. And I would say, you know, that's her experience. Sometimes you most definitely can hear the spirit in words. So she's speaking from her experience here. More often it is wordless, I would say. Words are less often, but it can communicate in words, obviously, or we wouldn't have NTI, right? So following the heart can be challenging because the heart doesn't communicate in words. But then she gives us some ideas about how to recognize the heart. She says a sense of yes or rightness about a particular direction. And she doesn't mention no, but I find that intuition most definitely guides in yes or no feelings. This morning, you know, I have a routine which I typically follow, but I'm always open to intuition more than my routine, right? The routine is default, but if I feel something intuitive that's different than the routine. So this morning I, spent some time in contemplation and tip writing. And then typically after the tips, I go to meditation. You know, I go to the bathroom, get a drink of water, meditation. And so this morning when I got up from the tips to go to meditation, I could really feel a no about going to meditation. Not an ego resistance no, just that intuitive no. and a yes about going into the kitchen and doing some cleaning in the kitchen. And so I did that, and I put on Muji. I put on Awakening Together Radio, which had Muji on. And what Muji was saying went right with the contemplation I was just in. And if I'd gone straight to meditation, I would have missed Muji. So I cleaned the kitchen and listened to Muji, and he was like adding to my contemplation, right? Giving me more fodder to contemplate. And then when the kitchen was clean, Muji was done about the same time. A song came on to Awakening Together Radio. And then the yes. Then the yes came to go down and meditate. And I came down and meditated for an hour. You know, the no came first, though. The no, when I started to get up and go downstairs to meditate, there was just this no. Just this, not a word, just the feeling of no. And then I kind of turned towards the kitchen, because it was one of the things that I knew needed to be done, was the kitchen clean. Kind of turned towards the kitchen, and I felt this yes. And there was even that thought, huh, that's not my, you know, then the ego pipes in, that's not my routine, I'm supposed to go meditate, you know. But I could feel that that was just the ego. I could feel that I was being led to go clean the kitchen. And so I stepped into the I don't know mind. I don't know, you know, what I'm supposed to do. I mean, I don't know why I'm supposed to clean the kitchen. Of course, I figured out pretty quickly once I put on Awakening Together Radio and heard Muji continuing my contemplation for me. But, you know, you have to just learn how to feel those little yeses and those little no's and trust them. And then that's an example of when the ego was using spiritual language, but it was still being the ego, right? The ego pipes in that, you know, somehow I'm not doing what I'm supposed to be doing, so I'm supposed to go meditate after the tips. It's talking spiritual. But, you know, you feel that it has the feeling of judgment in it, right? You know, it has the feeling of, oh, I'm not good, I'm bad, I should be meditating, instead I'm cleaning the kitchen. That's why the feelings, that you can really trust the feelings. So she says a sense of yes, but I would also say a sense of no can be the guidance, the coming from the heart. She says motivation and enthusiasm for a particular direction. And I got to tell you, I noticed this morning when I went in to clean the kitchen, I really wanted to clean the kitchen. I mean, you're like, it was exactly the moment I was supposed to be cleaning the kitchen. Because I'm not some crazy woman who loves cleaning kitchens. You know, I mean, you know, if you ask me, what are your favorite things to do? Trust me, cleaning kitchen isn't going to be anywhere on the list. But this morning I felt that enthusiasm. It was like, whew, I want to clean the kitchen now, right? And so that motivation or that enthusiasm can be one way that you're being led by the heart or the Holy Spirit. Inspired ideas, of course, can come. But inspired ideas, I want to warn you, can also come from ego. Or at least I can think they're inspired ideas, right? You know, like if I have this idea that something is wrong with my health, and I need to find the answer, and I'm really worried about it, where ego is going to give me ideas. And because I'm trying to find the answer to my health problem, I'm going to think it's an expired idea. Or the same thing with finances or anything else. So, you know, you really have to pay attention again to those feelings. You know, is it coming with the feeling of, you know, just love, joy, gratitude, peace, acceptance, compassionate, openness? Or have I been worrying, and now this is my hope that I can control things with this idea? You know? I mean, you kind of have to be really subtle in looking at your feelings and getting very, very honest with yourself. Another one, and I also have noticed this many times, although I don't have a specific example in my mind right now, just spontaneous actions that just happen without thought. Suddenly you notice that you're standing and you're walking and, you know, you weren't thinking about standing up and walking. I suppose my teaching is always this. You know, I don't plan my teaching. I do the assignments. I do the reading, you know, and I highlight things so that I can find them when it comes time to teach. But I don't plan the teaching, right? So the teaching is that spontaneous action that's just happening without thought. Now here she does comment that the heart will show you which way to go and which way not to go. Which, like I said, today was not to go straight to meditation. Go clean the kitchen first. Listen to Muji. She also says, and this is true, we all know this is true, the heart doesn't just communicate directly in us. The heart also communicates through events and people showing up in your life that bring certain opportunities, right? The heart, remember, the heart, she's not referring to the human heart. She's really referring to the Holy Spirit. And the heart communicates through somebody walking up and offering you something or whatever, right? It uses everything, not just you, to communicate to you. She also says, and this is also true, that the heart can communicate by taking something away. That when, you know, your resistance is keeping you from a change that's really in your best interest, the heart can move the world in such a way that that change occurs anyway. You know, you might lose a job or lose a spouse or, you know, something else, right? If it's not in your best interest. So the heart can bring you opportunities through the universe. It can also take things away. And it's all in your best interest. She says, whenever your actions in the day are just feeling kind of easeful, then you're in the right mind. When it doesn't feel easeful, you're listening to the ego. But she does also comment, and this is very important, that the action could be the one that the right mind wants you to make, but the real reason you don't feel good about it is because you're listening to the wrong mind's interpretation of the action. You know, so for example, I feel pretty confident that everything I do in my work life is really coming from the wrong mind. You know, everything, it's all awakening together, and, you know, this is all the right mind's, this is the right mind's baby. But every now and then I'll get that little idea, I'm too busy. And when I get the little idea, I'm too busy, suddenly I feel stressed. I'm doing the right work. I'm doing exactly what I'm supposed to be doing right now. It's only the thought that is wrong. So drop the thought, nothing else changes, and everything's fine again. So just because you don't feel good about what you're doing doesn't necessarily mean you're doing the wrong thing. You could just be thinking the wrong thing while you're doing it, right? So you really need to get very discerning. I say whenever you aren't feeling, you know, joyous, grateful, accepting, et cetera, the first thing you should do is look at your mind and see what you're thinking. That's the first place you should look. Oh, Jay says, I had a Freudian slip. I said wrong mind, but I'm not certain what the whole sentence was. But hopefully y'all got the right communication, even if my mouth used the wrong words. So again, when everything feels easy, then you are listening to the heart. When things are not feeling easeful and there's some stress, you're listening to the ego. Maybe you need to change what you're doing, but maybe you only need to change the thoughts you're listening to about what you're doing. Kind of reminds me, I used to hate pulling weeds. I mean, I really hated pulling weeds. It was like my least favorite chore of all the chores in the world. And every time, I mean, I had to pull weeds, you know. It just happens if you own houses. You have to go out and pull weeds sometimes. But every time, I mean, I would just grump and grump and grump in my mind, and I hated pulling weeds. And then one day it just hit me. What if I quit complaining about it in my mind and I just go pull weeds? Made all the difference in the world. I found out that pulling weeds can be a wonderful experience. You know, so it wasn't the action. It wasn't like, oh, I'm not supposed to pull weeds because I feel like crap every time I do it. No. I was supposed to pull weeds. I just wasn't supposed to be complaining in my mind the whole time I was pulling weeds, you see? So always check your mind first. she talks about change, and she says basically that change happens, and that change happens because change is supposed to happen. That's how new things are born, is through the death of the old, right? That's just the process of temporary form. So things change. And again, what she's encouraging is that we follow the heart's interpretation of the change rather than the ego's interpretation of the change. And she's now saying the same thing that I just said, that, you know, everything could be changing perfectly in form because that's what the heart wants, but the ego tends to want things to stay the same. And so everything's going along perfectly, even though things are changing, it's all perfect. But what we're listening to is the ego's interpretation of the change. And that's why we feel miserable about it. So again, check the mind first, right? She says if things are changing, then that must be what the heart wants. Right? Kind of reminds me of Byron Katie saying, how do I know it's supposed to happen? Because it's happening, right? If things are changing, then that must be what the heart wants. So if you aren't happy with the change, you're just listening to the ego's interpretation. She says instead of listening to the ego's interpretation about the change, she says have kind of a curiosity. Ask, you know, what does life want here? Where is life moving me? Where's the flow going? What's showing up in the flow? What opportunities are there? What inspiration is there? What people are there? You know, kind of look and try to see what's unfolding through divine grace. Look at change that way, rather than resisting it and wishing things would stay the same. And again, change can be anything. You know, some of it mine would think is really horrible, like your partner leaving you, getting fired from a job, you know, a death. But change happens. It's the way things are in the form. So it's just a matter of what are you looking at the change with, the right mind or the wrong mind. She says, moment by moment, the divine self reveals its plan. You may have to pay close attention to see that something new is unfolding. And it may take a while for the new path or new life to be revealed. But by following the breadcrumbs, moment by moment, the way is revealed, and the new life that is trying to be born will become evident. So just kind of have a bit of patience during change. Watch the breadcrumbs, see where life is taking you, and go that way. She says that most people's lives are actually a co-creation between the ego and the heart. In other words, most people listen to a mixture. So a part of what they are paying attention to and experiencing is the ego, and a part of what they are paying attention to and experiencing is the heart. That's what A Course in Miracles calls the split mind. She says, to the extent that you listen to the heart more than the ego, you'll be happier, your life will be easier, and more fulfilling. If you are listening to the ego more than the heart, then you're going to find yourself with more difficulties, frustrations, blocks, more suffering, right? Yeah, more struggle. But it's interesting that she says most people listen to both, and that's true. You know, probably very few people listen to only the right mind. But what we want to do is try and change that ratio, right? We want to continually listen to the right mind more and the wrong mind less. Keep changing that ratio. She says, a positive attitude is very important in life. No matter what life delivers, try and stay with that positive attitude. And to be honest, that is very important. Because of the creative principle, right? The creative principle is picking up on our current way of being and believing and creating the next moment from that. And this is happening in a universal way, not a personal way. Again, it's what we called the code when we studied it earlier. So if I'm very negative, if I'm always in ego, the creative principle is picking up on that and delivering more of that to me in my mind and in my emotions and in my the way I perceive. So by being more in the right mind, the creative principle picks up on that and the delivery comes from that. Again, most of us are in both, ego sometimes and right mind sometimes. What we want to do is change that ratio, and because of how the creative principle works, that's going to change everything. The biggest mistake that we make is being an ego. That's why that one practice we talked about earlier, just discerning the source, if it's ego, let it go, if it's spirit, following it, is the best practice of all. Because the biggest mistake we make is being an ego. And again, one reason that we be an ego is because we value the world. And valuing the world itself is the wrong mind. And therefore, when we're valuing the world, we are in the wrong mind by default. And then we're trying to make things in the world work out to be a certain way. And we're just hanging out in ego. That's going to the creative principle. And we receive more thoughts and more perceptions that match. You know, we create a future like the past. So we want to shift that so that we don't create a future like the past. We want to shift that by shifting the ratio, constantly getting better and better and better at letting go of ego and listening to and following the right mind. It changes everything. Everything. Again, because of the creative principle. The next thing she talks about is life purpose. Peace Pilgrim used to also say that everyone has a life purpose. I've noticed, however, in my experience that sometimes people stress about that. They're constantly searching with a sense of lack or a sense of I'm not good enough for their life purpose, right? So let's listen to what she says about life purpose because it's very wise. So if you feel like you haven't found your life's purpose yet and that bothers you, listen carefully to what Gina says next. She says, here are some things to understand about your life purpose. Number one, you will discover your life's purpose and fulfill it by doing what you love and what you have a natural talent and personality makeup for. You will discover your life's purpose and fulfill it by doing what you love and what you have a natural talent and personality makeup for. You know, we've heard the saying, follow your bliss. Well, think about everything we've learned tonight. What we've learned tonight is that when you're listening to the right mind, you feel those feelings of joy, love, acceptance, gratitude. Right? We could just put all of those in the category of bliss. If you're following your bliss, it means you're following your right mind. You can tell by the feelings, which means you are fulfilling your life's purpose, whether you know it or not. You might say, but I'm just painting for myself. You know, I'm giving it to friends. I'm not a famous artist. Well, who said your life's purpose was to be a famous artist? If you're painting for yourself and giving it to friends and that's bringing you joy, that's what the heart wants you to do. Right? She says, your life's purpose is not necessarily what you do for a work or a career. It might be a hobby, you know, like just painting and giving the paintings to your friends, right? It might be a hobby. It might be a talent. It might just be sharing information with people. I think I do a lot of that. I just share information with people, right? It might be, listen to these things. Listen to these life purposes. These are the best. It might be growing emotionally. It might be healing a psychological wound. It might be advancing spiritually. You know, what if your life's purpose is simply in this lifetime to take another giant step forward spiritually? Right? I mean, that's a great life purpose. She says it could be raising children, learning to love. It could be inventing something. It could be, you know, making a contribution to society, bringing new ideas to a field or endeavor, balancing karmic debt, she says. She says, really, you know, it could be learning any lesson at all or developing any certain trait or capability. Sometimes I think when people are looking for their life purpose, they're much too limited. They think life purpose is supposed to be something like what Regina's doing, you know, scribing books, teaching, starting a church. It may not look like that, right? It may not look like that at all. It could just be, I'm not going to say, I'm going to take the just be out of it. That's the ego's interpretation. Let me backtrack on that. It could be the wonderful task of healing a psychological wound that's been with you for many lifetimes and has nothing to do with anything else, right? So realize that you don't know what your life's purpose is and follow the right mind because it does know. Again, your only job is to let go of ego and follow the right mind. Everything else will take care of itself. Your only job is to let go of ego and follow the right mind. Everything else will take care of itself. Your only job is to let go of ego and follow the right mind. Everything else will take care of itself, including your life's purpose. She says you may fulfill your life's purpose without ever realizing what it is. Think about that one. You could not even know that you did it. So in that way, we would say knowing our life's purpose is really none of our business. If we're supposed to know, we'll know. If we're not supposed to know, it's none of our business. Our only job is to let go of ego and follow the right mind, and everything else takes care of itself. She says, if your life's purpose is not fulfilled until later in life, then what you do earlier in life will surely lead up to it, and that will be fulfilling in its own way. And that's certainly my experience. I can look back on my life, and I can see all of these things that I did along the way, all of these skills that I picked up along the way, and how they're all being used now, right? Like my whole life was preparing me, but I was 44 before I received the calling. So, you know, you could also be in a preparation phase. Is something that could be happening right now. She says your life's purpose will unfold in its own time. Patience and trust are called for. So if you're one of those people who feels some stress about trying to find your life's purpose, feels like there's something wrong because you don't know what your life's purpose is, just let go of that. I mean, if you're feeling stress because you don't know what your life's purpose is, the fact that you're feeling stress should tell you you're listening to ego. And based on what we learned tonight, that means you can let go of thinking about your life's purpose. Because when you think about it, you feel stress. Or when you think about it, you feel not good enough. That means that's ego. You see how this works? Yeah, and we don't have to get caught up in form identity. All right, so I think it's time for me to give you guys next week's assignment. And Ken's not here. He usually pastes it, but I'll try typing it. So the first thing you're going to do, which you already know this, I don't know why I'm telling you, you're going to do workbook lessons 313 to 319. There you go. Workbook lessons 313 to 319. And I'm not going to type this part in because you guys know this. You're also going to practice daily awareness, watching awareness, loving consciousness, or abandon release meditation for 20 to 40 minutes a day. You know about the meditation, 20 to 40 minutes a day. And you're going to practice the loving all method. And then the next assignment, I will type in, this is the reading for the week. We're going to read NTI, 2 John, 3 John, and Jude. And they are all very, very short. Those are pages 453 to 459. Read NTI, 2 John, 3 John, and Jude, pages 453 to 459. And they're all very short, so it's just a little bit of reading. I think somebody else got the mic. Can you guys still hear me? No mic yet. Yeah, I think somebody else took the mic and played some music, so that person may need to be red dotted, restricted. Oh, was it an accident? Okay, if it was an accident, then that's okay. If it's somebody we know, that's okay. Not a problem. But anyway, I don't know what you missed because when the mic was taken. So I'll just repeat what I was saying. I was saying read NTI 2 John, 3 John, and Jude, pages 453 to 459. And again, those are all very short. Yeah, you got that. Okay, good. Well, then I guess I'm done. So I'm going to be posting this tonight because Ken's not here, so I'll get that done as soon as I can. Definitely get it done tonight so you guys will have it in the morning. And that's it. Yeah, I'm going to let go of the mic and let you play a song. Go ahead, Cheryl. Bye, everybody.